and welcome to the Business Standard Morning Show. I'm Nazia Iqbal, and here's a look at the stories for the day.
This is GE Vernova, helping generate and move the energy that will change the world. Welcome to a new era of energy.
The Australian Parliament on Tuesday gave its assent to a free trade agreement with India and simultaneously amended the double taxation avoidance agreement. The pact will double trade between the two nations. The amendments to the double taxation treaty will help Indian IT firms save millions of dollars every year. In this report, Bhashwar explains what India's first free trade deal with a major Western economy means and how it will benefit the country's foreign trade.
Signed in April this year, the Economic Cooperation and Trade Agreement, or ECTA, has now been ratified by the Australian Parliament. The pact may come into effect as early as the 1st of January 2023. This will be India's first trade deal with a developed country in over a decade. It is also the third such agreement signed by India in recent times, after the Mauritius and UAE trade pacts. The development was also hailed by Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who said that it will further strengthen the India-Australia Comprehensive Strategic Partnership. After the trade deal comes into force, India-Australia bilateral trade is expected to almost double, crossing $45 to $50 billion in 5 years, from $25 billion at present. In FY22, India had a trade deficit of $8.5 billion with Australia. India's top five export items to Australia in FY22 were mineral fuels and oils, pharmaceutical products, precious stones, precious metals and jewellery, nuclear reactors, boilers, machinery and mechanical appliances, and articles of iron or steel. Mineral fuels, oils and waxes were also the top item category among imports, after which the remaining top four items of import were pearls, precious stones and metals and jewellery, ores and slag, chemicals, compounds of precious and rare earth metals and radioactive elements, and tanning and dyeing extracts, pigments and paints. Now, let us delve into the pact's benefits for India. Commerce and Industry Minister Piyush Goyal told the media that the Indian information technology sector would be the biggest beneficiary. Along with ratifying the trade agreement, the Australian Parliament also amended the double tax avoidance agreement with India to stop taxing the offshore income of Indian IT firms operating in Australia. This will resolve a long-pending issue and lead to savings of over $200 million for IT companies per year. Under the deal, Australia has agreed to eliminate customs duty immediately on 98.3% of all traded goods and remove all duties over the next 5 years. India, on the other hand, will do the same on 40% of products immediately and on 70.3% of goods over a period of 10 years. Trade Minister Goyal said that this was the first time that Australia had opened 100% of all its traded goods without any quota restriction for any country. The major labour-intensive sectors in India that will benefit from the elimination of customs duty include textiles and apparel, agricultural products, leather, furniture, jewellery and pharmaceuticals. Goyal also highlighted that as a result of the trade pact, cheaper raw material imports and intermediate goods would increase Indian industry's competitiveness in other markets. In good news for the Indian pharmaceutical industry, Goyal said that medicines that had passed the approval process in the US and UK would now enjoy a fast-tracked mechanism for approvals from the Australian regulatory system. But the FTA with Australia is an interim agreement, and a more comprehensive pact is in the pipeline.
The expectation from India's side is that trade with Australia will be doubled in 5 years. Now, that could be a tall ask. You know, you need to do much more than just look at tariff liberalization or tariff reduction. Like I mentioned at the beginning, that Australia already had low tariffs. There are other issues, which is those issues fall fairly and squarely at our door, which are issues relating to trade facilitation, you know, and generally reducing trade costs. And that is one area where we need to look at. Finally, you know, there is also a window in the services sector. There is a very, you know, small window out there. And this covers only business services, you know, and not all other kinds of services where India could actually benefit from. But these sectors have not been included in the ECTA. You know, they could actually come in the follow-up to the ECTA, that is the Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement.
The trade pact comes amid warnings from economists and international organizations that several major economies are facing a real risk of sliding into a recession. India is already feeling the pain. In October, the country's merchandise exports contracted for the first time in 2 years, in part due to slowing external demand. Since a slowdown or a recession in the West will lead to a decrease in demand in general, experts see India's exports coming under pressure in the months ahead. These worrisome developments come at a time when the centre is pursuing a changed foreign trade strategy. Being doubtful of the benefits of freer trade, it had earlier put new agreements on hold and scrapped bilateral investment treaties. In recent times, however, the government has acted on multiple new free trade agreements, from signing a comprehensive partnership with the United Arab Emirates to moving discussions forward with the United Kingdom and the European Union. So, how will this change of heart, along with the latest pact with Australia, impact India's foreign trade prospects?
When we entered into these, these FTA negotiations from 2021, the government was extremely confident because it came on the back of a very strong export performance. Now, with the slowing down of exports and the slowing down of the global economy, now the entire equation sort of changes. And it changes to such an extent that now what we need to do domestically to really see how our manufacturing sector exporters can find additional market access and to really do a diagnosis as to what needs to be done at our end to get those additional market access. That exercise needs to be done ASAP.
With global merchandise trade predicted to lose momentum sharply in 2023, India must diversify beyond its traditional markets and trade partners. And while the government's recent thrust on FTAs is welcome, such pacts must now be used to facilitate the country's participation in global value chains.
In another big development, India on Monday came out with a framework to address the menace of fake online reviews on e-commerce websites. Now, websites like Amazon and Flipkart and food delivery apps like Zomato and Swiggy will have to make sure that the reviews on their platform are not fake or misleading. Debargya's story offers an insight into this initiative, which is being touted as the world's first.
The Department of Consumer Affairs on Monday announced guidelines for electronic commerce platforms to fight the menace of fake reviews and ratings through automated and manual moderation. The guidelines are an attempt to filter out biases, fraudulent posts, and inappropriate language, and also verify the authenticity of the reviewers on e-commerce platforms. The set of regulations was launched jointly with the Bureau of Indian Standards, or the BIS, and will be applicable to every online platform which publishes consumer reviews. The guidelines will come into force on November 25. The standard will initially be voluntary compliance for all e-commerce platforms operational in the country. When made mandatory, any violation will invite punishment for unfair trade practices or violation of consumer rights. The standard prescribes specific responsibilities for the review author, the review administrator, as well as for organizations. The review author is responsible for confirming acceptance of the terms and conditions and providing contact information. The review administrator's responsibility is to safeguard personal information and train staff. Organizations will also have the responsibility of developing a code practice and necessary stipulation for terms and conditions like accessibility criteria and ensuring that content does not contain financial information, etc. Under the new regulations, all reviews should include the publishing date and star rating. Platforms will have to appoint review administrators who will moderate reviews either manually or using automated tools. Consumers won't be allowed to edit their reviews or use inappropriate language, and authors giving fraudulent reviews should be restricted from repeating the same. Finally, e-commerce platforms must provide full disclosure of all paid consumer reviews of products and services. But why were these regulations necessary? And why have fake reviews become so rampant? Salman Waris of Tech Legis Advocates and Solicitors explains.
So during the pandemic, most of the purchases were being done online. Now, with the volumes and the competition being so high, the only method of verifying a particular purchase or the deciding factor at times for consumers is the review of people who have bought it earlier. So that's when these reviews come into play, and they are at times a deciding factor in majority of the cases. In post-pandemic days, obviously the online purchases declined. Now consumers have other options as well. But again, to attract consumers and ensure the sale, some of the online platforms have indulged in this practice of getting fake reviews.
Speaking of the major challenges in countering the practice of fake reviews, Karan Thorani of Elara Capital says keeping track of the reviews and the sellers which encourage them can be a major challenge.
If you look at all these platforms, most of the platforms are marketplace-led models, wherein you really don't know in terms of who the resellers are. I mean, there are like multiple resellers that most of the platforms engage with. And that's why, you know, it becomes like a challenge to, you know, kind of counter these fake reviews. And India is a very large market. I mean, in terms of smartphones, mobile penetration is phenomenally high. So this is a problem which is an ongoing problem. It is not just in the e-commerce space. It is there across the board on social media, video OTT apps, any platform where you need to actually pay money, right? To get the number of subscribers, there are a lot of, you know, bots and fake reviews and a lot of fake customers which are there. So tracking this becomes complicated because India as a market is very big. It's multilingual market, too many languages which are there over here.
Waris believes there might be other factors at play here as well.
As far as the platforms themselves are concerned, at times the fact that the volumes, it's a volumes game, and the volumes, the number of sales that are made on a particular platform, the platform earns revenue out of it. So at times they may also look the other way and claim that they have practical problems in actually implementing and enforcing some of these new guidelines, or for that matter, even in terms of verifying the reviews itself.
Thorani of Elara Capital also points out that the rampant rise of fake reviews might have major financial implications for e-commerce platforms. Platforms like Amazon have been battling fake reviews for a long time, mounting legal challenges on sellers and fake review websites since 2015. In such a scenario, e-commerce platforms are expected to welcome the regulations by the Department of Consumer Affairs. However, it is still to be seen if the standards can prove effective against the ever-evolving tactics of fake reviewers and sellers who promote such reviews.
In another first, India released its long-term low-carbon emission development strategy at the recently concluded United Nations Climate Conference. As the focus on green energy takes center stage, is it time to add stocks from this space to your portfolio? Watch our markets report to find out.
India has ramped up its renewable energy capacity in the last 7 years from 39 gigawatts in 2015 to 110 gigawatts by 2022. At the recent G20 summit, Prime Minister Narendra Modi said that the country is on track to meet 50% of its energy requirements from renewable energy by 2030. And at the recently concluded United Nations Climate Conference, India laid out its low-carbon development plan with a focus on renewable energy, use of biofuels through ethanol blending, higher EV penetration, and use of green hydrogen. Against this backdrop, the renewable energy sector is gaining favor as an investment theme in India. Analysts too are upbeat on the space, which they believe is a long-term growth story in making.
We need to change, you know, faster, but, you know, due to the war in Ukraine and Russia, now that will not be possible. But, you know, India has been working on it. Now, after Prime Minister Modi has taken over, we have been working on green energy and renewable energy in a very big way. And, you know, there are a lot of changes which I can see. Once the war is out of the way, and if we can, you know, engage in few nuclear power also, it will be positive for India. No, I like NHPC. No, I mentioned that now. No, I like Tata Power because, you know, they have become an EPC contractor in solar power. So I like Tata Power in that space. Even JSW Energy is moving towards more solar and, you know, wind energy. There are many companies, but my top two pick will be Tata Power and NHPC.
The government's PLI schemes across solar equipment and battery storage systems with electric vehicle subsidies too have expanded the opportunity pool beyond power generation. For instance, Reliance and Adani Group firms Reliance New Energy Solar and Adani Infrastructure have received approval under the first tranche of the Solar PV Module PLI scheme. The RIL arm, along with Rajesh Exports, were the winners in the Advanced Chemistry Cell Battery Storage PLI scheme. Besides, experts are especially convinced of India Inc.'s capabilities in the solar energy space. According to Kotak Institutional Equities, several positive factors such as reasonable economics and government incentives make us believe that Indian companies will be able to participate in the solar opportunity. We don't see ambition or capital as a constraint for them, with players such as Adani Solar, Reliance Industries, and Tata Power Solar keen on the space. That said, analysts suggest investors to selectively pick stocks from these emerging segments.
So I think renewable energy is something which has been in the limelight for past 2 years, and a lot of stocks have done well in this space. This is a long-term structural story. India, as part of the global commitment to reduce the increase in the global temperature, has committed to certain milestones to reduce their carbon footprint. Now, this has led to a lot of buying interest in different companies in these spaces. So to play this story, people have invested in stocks which have substantial exposure to ethanol. People have invested in those using companies who are into EV. People, as I said, have invested in ancillary companies to solar, wind, and different hydropower companies. Some of the stocks that we like in this space are Tata Motors, Sundaram Fasteners, Global Spirit, Balram Chini, Greaves Cotton.
Global brokerage Jefferies meanwhile lists NTPC, Power Grid and JSW Energy as its top picks. On the bourses, shares of KPI Green Energy, NHPC, Inox Wind and NTPC have rallied up to 52% so far this year since April, versus a 5% gain in the BSE Sensex. Equity markets could exhibit volatility today on account of the monthly FNO expiry. Besides, investors will react to the minutes of the US Fed's last policy meeting.
From the financial markets, let's shift our focus to politics. States governed by opposition parties are constantly in the news for their brushes with the governors. In Kerala, the state government is planning a bill to remove Governor Arif Muhammad Khan as the chancellor of state-run universities. Kerala's LDF government has been alleging that the governor is a political appointee. But what does the constitution say about the governor? And what is his role? Our next story breaks it down for you.
Article 153 of the Indian Constitution says that every state will have a governor. And Article 154 says that he will be the executive head of the state. And he will exercise the powers either directly or through officers subordinate to him. But Article 163 of the Constitution says that the governor will work on the advice of the Council of Ministers. It categorically says that there shall be a Council of Ministers with the Chief Minister at the head to aid and advise the governor, except insofar as he is by or under this Constitution required to exercise his function or any of them at his discretion. Article 200 allows the governor to assent, withhold assent, or reserve a bill passed by the assembly for the consideration of the president. In certain situations, the governor may promulgate the ordinances under Article 213. Governor is also the chancellor of the universities in the state. These include general universities, agricultural universities, technical universities, and medical universities. He is responsible for appointing the vice chancellors of the universities as well. In case of disagreements in the universities, the governor can reserve or reverse decisions taken by university bodies. Also, the governor presides over the convocation of the university. He can take final decisions on election disputes. Ideally, the governor's role should be apolitical. His decisions are always under scrutiny, especially when he is posted on a state ruled by an opposition party. Often, the governor is also faced with a tough choice when elections throw a hung assembly. The friction between the governor and the state government is not new. Parties in opposition have long been alleging misuse of the governor's office by the ruling party at the center. It had also led to the formation of two commissions. The Sarkaria Commission in 1988 report had advised against appointment of a governor who is a member of the ruling party at the center in a state being governed by opposition. It had suggested that the appointee should be an outsider and a person of eminence. In 2007, the M.M. Panchi Commission had also made similar recommendations.
Nation's trusted bank, SBI, the banker to every Indian.
The Panchi Commission has also suggested that the state legislature should have the power to remove the governor. Well, that's all we have for you today. We will be back with more news and analysis in our next episode. Stay tuned. Thank you for watching.
For more news, views and updates, subscribe to Business Standard on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast and Spotify. Also follow us on YouTube, Vimeo, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.